here on the Front Porch, where we tackle tough issues facing West Virginia and Appalachia like you and your friends do on your front porch. The state legislature just cut $16 million from higher education starting this month. What's that mean for students and the state as a whole? We have WVU's Vice President for Legal, Government, and Entrepreneurial Engagement, Rob Alsop, with us. Hey, Rob, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
The Front Porch is sponsored by the Charleston Gazette-Mail, using its CGM app to deliver the latest news, traffic, and weather alerts. Download the CGM app at iTunes or Google Play. I'm Scott Finn, CEO of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. We're joined, as always, by lawyer and conservative columnist Lori Lynn. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Scott.
And liberal columnist Rick Wilson with the American Friends Service Committee. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
All right, let's get to it. Are state budget cuts to higher education a tax increase on parents and students? That's a paraphrase of what your president said, Gordon Gee, while announcing a 5% tuition increase. What do you say, Rob?
First of all, you know, as you go through and you look at the state budget session and the legislative session this past year, you heard a lot of discussion about no increase in tax rates, but a willingness to close loopholes or a willingness to find revenue from other ways. And so what we heard from a number of folks was that, you know, higher education, they have an outlet to increase revenues through tuition increases and other things. And so while there was a hesitancy to directly vote to increase tax rates or to close loopholes, there certainly was a discussion that other entities could find revenues through other ways. And so I think the point President Gee was correctly making was the state of West Virginia, through support for higher education or health services or any number of programs, needed additional revenues. And while there may not have been any tax increases or loopholes closed, that doesn't mean that there wasn't a need for additional revenues to support vital programs in the state. And so you look at the overall trend in state support for higher education, and it does have a component impact on how we operate and the tuition that we charge.
Okay, so I take your point about that and President Gee's point, but you guys have a five-year plan on your website. You have 5% tuition increases each year baked in, apparently regardless of what the legislature does with your funding. So it feels a little bit like the institution is trying to blame the tuition increase on what the legislature is doing, when in fact you guys raise tuition by quite a bit every year independently of your state funding.
Well, it is certainly true that we had in our planning document a 5% increase for this year. As you look at the past decade, 15 years anyway, our state support, and this is true across the country, we've gone from 25% of our budget being funded by state appropriations down to around 16 or 17%. And so as you look at our entire budget and you build it, you do come to a point where if there are continued reductions in state appropriations, those revenues or reduction in expenses have to occur. And so to continue to be a land grant extension in every county and recruit and retain the best faculty and do the research we do, we said even though we lost more from the state, we're going to make that work. We're not going to increase tuition by more than the 5%. We're going to hold that. That's what we told our students. We got a state budget very late, and so we actually did an across-the-board reduction of around 4% of expenses for this upcoming year. So had we wanted to make up the whole $8 million, we could have done more of an increase in tuition, but it's a balance.
Looking at this from the perspective of a West Virginia family who wants to send their son or daughter to WVU, if you look at the median household income here in West Virginia since 2013, it's gone up around 6%. WVU in-state undergraduate tuition in that same time period has increased 29.7%, almost a third. Is that sustainable? How can that continue to go forward? And again, your five-year plan through 2021 shows a 5% increase in each of those years. How can we keep doing that and ask middle-class families to be paying that much more each year?
So it's a great question. And the first answer I would say is we need stability from a state higher education funding perspective. If you look at where we're funded compared to our peers, it's about $100 million less than our peers. Places like University of Missouri, Arizona, Michigan State, LSU. And so the first component of that is, you know, we haven't asked for more money, but we've said, can you please stabilize us? The continued cuts from the legislature have an impact. I would say the second point to what you've said is, if you look at what we do, a big component of what we do as we've increased tuition, is we have looked out for our need-based students. We raised $50 million for a scholarship campaign 2 years ago, specifically designed for need. And as we have increased tuition, we have also increased the amount of institutional support that we provide for students in need. To that point, almost half, 50% of our freshman class in, I think this was in 2014 or 2015, finished the year with no debt. So combined with Promise Scholarship, Family Resources, Pell Grants, and the scholarshiping from either our foundation or the university, half of that class had no debt at the end of their first year. And to keep costs down, a $29 million expense cut this past year and another $14 coming in this upcoming year. Your point that we just can't say, we've just got to keep on raising tuition on the backs of our students and continue to be a world-class institution at moderate cost is not sustainable. We've got to do other things to change our expense model, and we do need that help from the legislature to at least create a sustainable and consistent level of funding.
So, hey, Rob, it's Rick Wilson.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, I have to disclose that I'm a Marshall person, but I think I am with President Gee that this is an indirect tax increase on people who are pursuing higher education. And so without the focus on WVU, big picture thing, let's keep going back to we have the lowest educational attainment rate in the country at or near the bottom. Our higher education institutions contribute $2.7 billion every year and about 22,000 jobs. Tuition's gone up by something like 150% since in the last 15 years. State spending, if you adjust it for inflation, is about $130 million lower than it was in 2008. Student debt has gone up 70% since 2005. And the Promise doesn't cover as much as it did. So there are systemic issues, I think, that need to be addressed to make higher education more affordable, and that includes some legislative stuff and arguably federal policies too.
Is there a question in there, Rick? Or?
No, I'm just laying it out, man.
Rob, say how much you agree with Rick here.
Yeah, softball pitch, Rob.
First, the sustainable level of funding from the state is something that we have to address. I think if you look at the national trends in higher education, we have to do a better job both in West Virginia and regionally in making sure that we get our educational attainment up. Then that includes not only 4 years, not only graduate level, not only doctoral work at research at WVU, but it's at community colleges across the state. President Gee is pushing us every day to rethink and look at our business model. And, you know, something I gave to my team last week, I showed them a picture of Kodak and Blockbuster, and then I showed them pictures of Uber and Netflix. And I said, where is WVU going to fit on this continuum in 10 years? Are we going to be a disruptive institution that helps lead to better economic outcomes and opportunities for our students? Or are we not going to, are we going to be a slave to sort of the current regime and not move forward and not be innovative and disruptive? And so just like we need federal policy and state policy to be helpful, we've also got to look internally in making sure that the programs we offer, the classes we offer, and our cost structure provide that world-class education at a moderate cost. So I think everybody needs to step up and look hard at how we move forward from a higher education perspective, because we're not, from a debt load perspective, from a workforce perspective, we all have work we can do to move forward.
So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about WVU's Freedom Agenda. But first, so Rick, help me out here. People are listening right now. They have either A, become members of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, or B, not yet become members of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, despite the fact they are listening to The Front Porch. How do I change their minds, the ones that are not members?
This is like a free rider problem, right? Sort of an economic problem of like positive externality too, would that be right?
So Lori, what do you think?
Well, one way that you can do it, and you guys already do this, is you give someone something of, you know, nominal value, so it's not expensive to you, but if they pledge, you give them something where they can signal their virtue, right? The classic thing is the NPR canvas tote bag, right? So you donate and you get this thing, and it didn't cost the organization very much to give it to you, but you get to tote your library books around in it and show, you know, that you have the proper values And so, you know, you guys already do that. You give away mugs. Yes.
If you go to wvpublic.org, you can see all this stuff. You click on the donate button, it's all there.
Is there a tote bag?
Several tote bags.
There's also some kind of chocolate kickback scheme going on too, right?
We call it a premium.
Okay.
Where you can support Hall's Chocolates in Vienna, West Virginia. That's during our chocolate challenge. And one of our best relationships is with Fiesta, the Fiesta Ware Company up in Newell, West Virginia. They do our mugs, and they're beautiful. So, yeah, check that out, wvpublic.org, and click that donate button. Look for those tote bags and coffee mugs. Or you can call 800-RADIO-87, that's 800-723-4687, and talk to a real person. They'll help you become a member of West Virginia Public Broadcasting and support the Front Porch. Thanks. Okay, we're back, and we're talking to WVU's Vice President for Legal, Government, and Entrepreneurial Engagement, Rob Alsop. Rob, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Rob, I don't know if you're familiar. There was a study that came out from Pew just recently that says in a pretty dramatic shift that more than half of Republicans now say that colleges have a negative impact inside the United States. And it's the wealthier, older, and more educated Republicans that have the least positive attitudes toward higher ed. And what's new about this is that usually the majority of Americans of all parties had a positive view of higher education.
It's concerning to say that I understand all the factors between the two Obama elections and the most recent Trump election and the underlying factors of where this country is moving. I wouldn't pretend to be an expert on. I think we have to prove our case. I think higher education every day has to prove. And this is with local legislators. I mean, one of the things that we've been very cognizant of is over the past two elections, turnover in the legislature, I think there's more than 70 new members, both parties. And so a lot of historical knowledge of the value of higher education is not as well established as it once was. And so I think from a communication standpoint, both at the elected leadership level and in communities, we have to continue to prove our case. Dr. Gee brought this statistic up, I think, a month ago, that of the 11 million jobs that have been created in this country over the past 5-6 years, all but 80,000 of those jobs required something more than a high school diploma. And so while the polling shows maybe a devaluing in some people's minds of higher education, if you actually look at where the economy's going, it's exactly the opposite. And so what we can't afford to do is to have the next generation of leaders thinking that a high school graduation is sufficient.
WVU is such an important institution in this state, and I think more so in a lot of ways than a lot of public institutions in other states. It's very visible. I didn't go there, but I wouldn't exist if it weren't for WVU. My maternal grandparents met there. They were born in little towns on opposite ends of the state, and they met there and married, and you know, I wouldn't be here without it. Just a question about how you do your job and the significance of the institution. What percentage of legislators currently are WVU graduates? And does that make your job easier or harder?
So the good thing, WVU, I have 2 degrees from WVU, and I've been in Morgantown since before I could walk. And so it means a tremendous amount to me. Just an aside, I mean, that's one of the reasons why Dr. Gee goes out and visits all the counties, to keep that connection. And I think it's real and it's strong. From a legislative perspective, generally speaking, I think WVU carries a lot of broad support. We do keep in good contact, not only with WVU grads, but every legislator is important to the university. You know, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. In one sense, they see that, you know, Morgantown's economy is doing well, that WVU has raised a lot of money. So therefore, you know, it's easier to make WVU take a cut because they can afford it the most. And I think it's not that any legislator doesn't believe or supports WVU more than others, but it's just sort of working through that. And so from our perspective, you know, if you're a business person and you're going to invest in your strengths, WVU is a strength. And so we think we have earned, and we're going to continue to fight for that continued investment. And I think this is true for all of higher education. Everybody supports and believes in it, but you know, legislators have a tough job. We spend 10% of our budget revenues on unfunded liabilities from pensions that should have been funded since the 1950s. We have healthcare costs that everybody knows continues to increase. Once you take those two out, K-12 education, and then you take out prisons and corrections and everything else, there's less than $1 billion, and higher ed has a big part of that. And so we understand and we know we have to be good partners, but it's a matter of proving that we're worthy of state taxpayer dollars every year.
you know, we focused a lot, and rightfully so, on the budget cuts and the tuition increases and all those changes into the budget. But something really big and pretty important happened for WVU Marshall and the West Virginia School for Osteopathic Medicine. I know you were personally involved in those discussions. Could you explain in a nutshell what it was?
Sure. So there were actually two pieces of legislation. One related really solely to human resources, and then the second piece related to governance. And so the part you mentioned, I'll start there. The osteopathic school wanted to go private. Governor Justice said that he wanted them to stay as a state institution. And through that, there were some complaints that there could be some efficiencies gained through a streamlined governance structure. Governor Justice, through some discussions, came up with a piece of legislation, which we wholeheartedly supported, which gave WVU, the osteopathic school, and Marshall University a significant amount of flexibility for what I will call a second approval process through the Higher Education Policy Commission. So we have a board of governors for WVU. It's 17. We have two faculty members, a student rep, a classified staff rep, and then 13 members appointed by the governor. And so they're primarily our governing board. Previously, on hiring a president or compensating a president or capital projects, we had to go to the policy commission for a secondary approval. And so not only would our board vote on it, but we would go to Charleston for a second approval. And so what largely Governor Justice's legislation did was to say that we're going to allow those decisions to be made at the local level. We also received a huge amount of freedom as it relates to human resource policy that had been centralized to allow us to, for example, come up with our own reduction in force policies, our own compensation strategies, and any number of human resource functions that we can really determine through our Board of Governors, as opposed to being systemically determined across, I think, all 18 higher education institutions.
So, in essence, I'm going to grossly simplify some of that, in that it seems like the trade-off is, okay, if you guys are going to fund us at a lower level, at the state level, at the very least, give us more freedom to make our own choices here, to operate more efficiently, and let us set our own path without having to get secondary approval from another board at the state level.
That's correct. I mean, we knew, you know, we'd already lost going into this session over $30 million in base funding. And so what we said is, look, you're not going to come up with more money for higher education. All we can ask for is stability. But if you could allow us to become more efficient as an organization, that would be a great second place, because what we can do then is look at our cost structure and start to get some of those costs out. That saves taxpayer dollars. It helps to moderate some of the incredibly relevant and right concerns that Laurie mentioned as we've discussed through this, so that we can moderate those costs. And the changes the legislature gave us are meaningful. Some of the changes won't be easy, but we're very grateful that we were trusted to make those decisions ourselves.
So, Rob, one of your jobs is to work with lawmakers and people in the administration about WVU and other higher education issues. And, you know, we've had now a spate of op-eds and letters and statements from different Republicans defending the lack of a tax increase and the budget cuts of higher education. How do you personally go back and deal with that later when you deal with those same lawmakers?
So, for example, John O'Neill was a huge champion of our efforts in Beckley. And so the way I look at it is, while he may have a disagreement with the university right now on this issue, from a fundamental perspective, I think we have a good relationship with Delegate O'Neill and moving forward. And so I can also tell you that some of our Democratic friends weren't very happy with some of the HR policies that we want to do. And so depending on the issue, you know, we always don't see eye to eye. I can tell you, I think Rick and I probably, when I was in the governor's office, saw eye to eye on a lot of issues, but there were some things where he probably scratched his head and said, "Oh, I can't believe they're doing that." And so what I always tried
<No comment. laughs>
what I always tried to do was, you know, it's not personal. Everybody has a job to do.
So you remember the old cartoon about the sheepdog? Was it a coyote or a wolf? And, you know, when they were working, they did their thing, but afterward they punched out and they were kind of cool. Is that sort of what you're hoping for, Rob, with that?
Yes. I mean, and, you know, I know President Gee has had, and I've touched base with some. I mean, we've talked to, I know he's spoken with several legislators, and, you know, I think they didn't like some of the comments and some of the issues. But by the same token, the point we've made is we have an issue with funding higher education in the state. We don't want that trend to continue. $40 million over a five-year period and a reduction of state support when it goes to keep our tuition costs lower for our students. Not a one-to-one ratio, but a factor. we need to continue to talk about that. And we can have good faith disagreements about where things go, but it doesn't mean that, you know, it's going to, hopefully it won't get personal. I certainly don't take offense to everybody stating their position and moving forward.
All right, Rob Alsop, he is the WVU Vice President for Legal, Government, and Entrepreneurial Engagement. Rob, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Rick, what's your Bible verse / words of wisdom for the week?
I don't have a Bible verse this week, but a line occurred to me from West Virginia filmmaker Danny Boyd's movie Paradise Park. Education's the one thing the man can't take away from you. And I think that is literally the case.
And that's The Front Porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with Lori Lynn and Rick Wilson. Thanks for listening. We don't need no education.